It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Okay, we're joined here today with Franklin Lopez, once again from Submedia. This is going to be part of a three-part series with anarchist projects in so-called Canada, discussing anarchist, anti-colonial, anti-capitalist resistance movements and struggles. Frank, of course, needs no introduction. He's been on the show before, part of the Submedia Collective, making awesome films. And at the time of this recording, you had just released the new J20 documentary. It's about 37 minutes long. It's fabulous. It's definitely going to stand the test of time. This is going to be something that people are going to be watching for a while. Can you just talk about it? How did this come together? This feels like probably one of the best ones I've seen that you all have done.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. And thanks for having me on the show. So we usually never do like one single story on a documentary. The exceptions being like the very first Trouble was all about Standing Rock, and then this particular one about the J20. And we have been following the story since the beginning, and we felt that the story was not getting its due on the media, but also that we wanted to get people's who were involved in the case and who were, you know, part of the defendants, but also the lawyer, or at least one of the lawyers involved, to give us a perspective while everything was fresh, right? Because this just wrapped up in July, and we feel that part of the work that we're doing right now, more than just sort of reacting to the news and what's happening on the day to day, is to create like documents that, as you say, that can stand the test of time and that can be useful. For movements for years to come. And so once the trial wrapped up and we were about to go on break, we had a conversation about usually our costs for making Trouble, aside from paying the folks that are part of the collective, are the videographers that we hire in different parts of the world. And for this one, we said like we can probably get a bunch of interviews in DC. And one of us could go, and that one of those people is me, and so we went to DC and we interviewed actually 9 people, which is way more than we usually interview per show, and I know that there's, you know, 200 plus people for this episode, but I think that the folks that we were able to talk to were a nice smattering of different perspectives on, in my opinion, is like the most important political trial of recent history in the United States.
Yeah, for anybody that hasn't watched it, you know, one of the things that I really walked away from that I really appreciated was that there were anarchists that were in there, and there's also people in Black Lives Matter DC, and there was also people that identified both as anarchists and in Black Lives Matter. There wasn't that necessarily that political ideology distinction, but it was nice to see kind of, you know, two different groups being represented and seeing kind of a wide perspective, and also seeing people in the BLM chapter there kind of address some, you know, the tropes and critiques that, you know, we've all heard. So that was really great, I felt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do think that I think that it's a fair point to point out that, you know, anarchism in North America is mostly like a white scene. You know, if you've been to like as many anarchist scenes as I visited in North America, you know, it's majority white. But there's one thing that you can't say about DC is that the scene seems very diverse. And there was, and for anybody who followed the J20 sort of like social media blast, it was always like J20 and Black Lives Matter Washington DC sort of pushing for support for these defendants. And this is something that you know, I think should help sort of dispel the myth that anarchists are not willing to work with groups of people of color, which, you know, anybody who's been around knows that that's not true. But this really like exemplifies it, like, you know, really two sort of distinct political groupings, if you may, really throwing down for each other. The person that we interviewed from Black Lives Matter at DC, April, she identifies as an anarchist as well. And there were so many parts of that interview that we didn't use basically because of time, but she basically goes on to say a lot of the same things that Cornel West said back in Charlottesville, right? That, you know, it was anarchists and anti-fascists who basically like, you know, stood the ground and protected a lot of Black Lives Matter activists on that day. And I think that, you know, when it comes down to to solidarity, like the proof is in the pudding, you know, who's willing to like, you know, put their safety on the line for you. And I think that I think the example of what happened in DC that day is actually one of the most awesome ones of seeing like this sort of crossing that line that usually people have created sort of imaginarily, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, you know, going back and watching that footage from the day, it almost seems like a different world. I feel like now with the conversation, at least in the media, becoming so much about civility and, you know, both sides and optics and all this stuff, I feel like I don't want to say people are afraid to like fight back, but they're also afraid of how it's going to like look within, you know, the broader context. And I think that one of the things that the film did a really good job, like one of the people said in the interviews, is like, look, this is what it looks like when people fight back against an authoritarian government. You know, it's not necessarily pretty. It's not necessarily nice, but it's not symbolic. It's actual resistance. And I think that's something really important. And, you know, it feels like in the United States, like right now, like just Trump every day is just coming out with some new, you know, crazy thing, you know, whether it's, you know, gutting the 14th Amendment to, you know, take, you know, people born in the United States away and deport them, or sending troops to the border. I feel like, you know, when his presidency first started, like, you know, J20 kind of like showed that, you know, people were out in the streets and really fighting. And I felt like things, we wrote this on It's Going Down recently, but things felt safer, you know, the more people in the streets fighting back, you know. And I feel like people have kind of given up the streets a little bit because they're waiting for the midterms to see how that's going to play out. And obviously, I think that's a wrong strategy.
Well, it's definitely a wrong strategy. And I think that, you know, obviously I'm north of the colonial border in Canada. So a lot of my experiences about what's happening with Trump are mediated by the media. But I'm not going to lie to you. When Trump won, I felt scared, you know, like a lot of people. I felt like, you know, things were going to take like a nasty turn. One is like seeing like the spontaneous acts of resistance on election night were something that really like uplifted my spirits and a lot of people's spirits. But then, you know, I was sitting down in front of my computer all day, inauguration day, just basically doing a lot of like social media support work, which is what I could do from over here. And just seeing how militant people were was hugely inspiring. It just, I mean, if anything gave me hope about the coming future was that, you know, this is the most policed event of, you know, of every 4 years in the United States, period, you know. And people did this like under the watchful eyes of like all the multiple law enforcement agencies that are in D.C. is not just the Metropolitan Police Department of the city, but it's just, you know, you got the FBI, you got the Secret Service, you got the Park Service. You know, you can think of federal agencies that have police agencies attached to them, and they're in D.C. And these folks were able to do this. And I think that a lot of the actions that we saw following that year, I'm not going to say that they all come from that. Obviously, people have been organizing for years, and we've been nurturing networks of resistance for many, many years. But certainly, these images have an effect. They actually have an effect at giving people a perspective of what's possible. And I think specifically, I'll just say one last thing, is that people outside of the United States think that these things are not possible in the U.S. They think that the U.S. is locked down, you know, that, you know, it's just you can't do resistance. And I think for people around the world that were also feeling despair because of the Trump thing could look to us or our comrades in the United States and see, like, OK, holy shit, like these guys, they have a lot of heart. And I think it's super helpful.
Yeah, and I mean, just one last thing on the J20 film. I mean, the thing that I thought was really beautiful as well is just, you know, hammering home the point that, you know, literally over 200 defendants that were arrested. You know, some of these people were probably, you know, new to street politics, or, you know, may not have been anarchists. I know, you know, some people in like DSA were arrested. You know, there was a broad spectrum of people that were arrested, but I mean, they all sat down and they all agreed not to snitch on each other. And, you know, watching the alt-right fall apart and tear itself apart and denounce each other and, you know, kind of eat itself is not only hilarious, but if you look at the J20 cases, I mean, it's people standing strong in the face of, I mean, 80 years is a life sentence. You're going to die in prison. And, you know, it's just inspiring to see people basically stand strong together. And, you know, I think the only regret that people might have is that some people did take plea deals early and they didn't wait for, you know, to be with the rest of the trial. But even still, those people that did, you know, did not snitch, you know, they got, you know, a small amount of time. You know, they've got something on their record that they'll have to deal with. But I mean, that's essentially it.
Yeah. And most of them were minors too. Right. I think I should point that out. But I think that in this particular instance, anarchists should really give themselves a pat on the back, because I think the fact that nobody snitched comes from like a lot of years of people doing like popular education around this stuff. And, you know, obviously we have the green scare to look at, obviously a different type of action that, you know, people were rounded up around. But, you know, there was plenty of snitching that went around. And I think that the anarchists have been successful at spreading a really good rhetoric and creating, more importantly, a culture where snitching is not a thing that people do, you know, and that people understand that solidarity is stronger than that. In this case, and I think that this is why it's so important to always remember this case, is proof. You know, the proof is in the pudding, as people say. All these people got off. But, you know, one remarkable part that didn't make a documentary is that a lot of these folks had their own individual lawyers. And I'm not going to say there were like 200 lawyers, but, you know, there was at least 100 lawyers. And instead of people using their lawyers as, you know, let me just save my own butt, everybody's using their lawyers to help the collective. And so they essentially outgunned the U.S. Justice Department, because they really had, in this particular case, they have more resources than them, or more people working on the case than the actual U.S. Department of Justice has. And
really amazing, yeah.
That is. I mean, I think people should really take this to heart, and, you know, like, next time there's a mass mobilization, that people really think about these things.
Yeah, I mean, sorry. One other thing I will say about this is also too. I mean, I remember, you know, leading up to the trials, talking with people, and the idea that there was going to be any sort of media coverage about the J20 case, people were almost hopeless. And by the end of the trial, I mean, at least in some circles. I mean, it definitely didn't. I mean, it wasn't on 60 Minutes or something like that. But I mean, it was covered in Newsweek. It was covered in, you know, mainstream publications. It was covered a lot in things like the Huffington Post and the Daily Beast, you know, more, you know, quote unquote, progressive or liberal publications. But I mean, it definitely got out there. It definitely, I felt like, to a lot of people on the left that were paying attention to, especially what Trump was doing, what the Department of Justice was doing to protest people that were concerned with civil liberties. I mean, the J20 defendants were seen as folk heroes fighting against the Trump administration, which is exactly true. And I think that's, you know, very important.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's important to remember that at the beginning there was virtually no coverage.
Right.
And I think I think that independent media outlets and specifically It's Going Down and Unicorn Riot and others and CrimeThink, for example, were the only ones that really were following that case. And I find it, you know, a little bit sad that media outlets that are usually sympathetic did not even mention, like even on Inauguration Day, did not even mention that this stuff was happening. You know, it was almost like trying to cover the sun with one hand. And I'm glad that they eventually came down and covered it, you know, but yeah, and I'm not going to name any names, but you know, there's outlets out there, who only really started covering this stuff once people started winning. And I think that, once again, the independent media, and I'm saying smaller outlets, really deserve a lot of credit. I know that, yeah, that one of the people from Unicorn Riot was, you know, actively going to the court and doing reporting, you know, something that a lot of lefty outlets were not doing.
Yeah, and that had a huge impact. I mean, just Unicorn Riot being there, you know, tweeting out, you know, Project Veritas just did this, you know, I mean, that was a huge thing. You know, definitely some of the stuff that we're proud of is writing about the connections between the far right and the state and the, you know, the police. I mean, the police literally the next day giving over to Frank, Chris Johnson, Frank Johnson, the guy, Charles Johnson, the guy from Got News, you know, the list of the people that had been arrested, you know, a friend of Richard Spencer, you know, helps the Daily Stormer fundraise, you know, literally gave him a list of all these people that had been arrested and they published it. You know, it's disgusting. You know, it's disgusting collusion between the police and the far right. And I think, you know, if that would have happened, you know, this week in the United States, you know, people would have been, you know, howling for blood. But at that moment, you know, it was seen as, you know, who cares? You know, the other thing that we're pretty proud of is the podcast that people produced, that I know had a big impact as well. And that was directly from defendants, you know, made by defendants and produced by them.
Yeah, no, I think that anarchist style of organizing that has you know, basically been tweaked time and time again to, you know, slowly perfecting itself, had you could tell that there were some really experienced comrades on the team that helped steer this like massive ship of 200 people in a direction that to give us this truly amazing story. And, you know, that's really why we felt that we needed to do this.
Awesome. Well, just moving forward, you know, at the end of the J20 film, it says the next trouble will be on mental health. And I'm just curious, can you give us some insight? What is this going to cover? I mean, obviously that's a huge broad subject. In today's climate, I mean, more people are suffering from various ailments under capitalism and sickness and everything else. You know, what is this going to tackle?
Yeah, we're going to try to unpack the idea of mental health from an anarchist perspective. So we talked to some really interesting guests. Who are anarchists or anti-authoritarians, and who are involved either in mental health collectives. So we're speaking with somebody from, well, one of the founders from the Icarus Project, but we're also speaking to a mental health collective out of that's based out of New York City called MAST. MAST is an acronym. Well, we also talk to folks who aid refugees and migrants leaving like sort of war-torn countries to move to the global north to deal with their traumas, right? And so I think, at least personally for me, and I won't speak for the collective, I think one of them, one of the things that I like to see this documentary achieve is to try to chip away at the stigma of mental health. And I think particularly around our movements for social change, I think that's something that a lot of people don't respect. You know, I mean, we want healthy bodies, but we need healthy minds as well. And with all the negative information and all the hard organizing that a lot of folks do, I think those things take a toll on people. And if there's something that I'd like to see is communities taking a little better care from each other, acknowledging that we're living in really, really hard times, and that we, and I'm not talking about self-care, but I'm talking about this idea of really taking care of yourself, you know, mind, body, and soul. And hopefully this will spark a conversation as to how people can start to address those things in their communities.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely look forward to that. So let's now talk about Submedia itself as a larger project. What's going to be new with Submedia in the coming period? I mean, we're coming up on the end of the year. What is the rest of the year going to look like for you all? And then in the coming terrain, what's going to be new at Submedia?
Yeah, so the next episode of Trouble, as you mentioned, is the one on mental health is going to be our last one for the year. This will come out at the end of November, beginning of December, and from there on, we're gonna take a break to sort of strategize for the coming year. But for the most part, you know, we've been having a lot of self-reflection as to what has worked and what hasn't. And one of the things that we agreed on is that we were going to try to just do one project for the next little while and see if we can bring up the quality of that project to a level where it can't be ignored. One of the things that we were finding is that while we were having a lot of fun switching between Trouble and the fucking news, that both projects were suffering from, I guess, lack of time to actually do it properly. And so we decided to put the stimulator on hold until we either can increase our collective to more people, or we figured out some sort of magical way to create more time and space. Because one episode of Trouble, it's four of us working on it. Right now, one of the things that not doing other projects has allowed us is that we can actually look at finish the show like a week in advance, and then go through it with a fine tooth comb and really try to spruce it up and fix it up and do color correction and add more graphics and do all these different things that we were not doing in the past. And I think that if people look at our last two shows ever since we sort of switched gears, you'll definitely notice a little bump in quality there. And I think that in this particular period where one is like there's more and more people producing documentaries, but two, you know, we're being locked out of the social media platforms that we used to promote our stuff. Go ahead.
I was going to say you mentioned two interesting things. The first thing was that, you know, we want to get it to the point where it cannot be ignored. I'm just curious, you know, what does that mean to you? What would it mean to not be ignored? And two, if you could just expand upon, you know, being locked out of social media platforms, because I mean, from our understanding, Submedia has not been kicked off of any social media platforms, right?
No, we definitely have not. And I think what I mean by not being able to be ignored is that, you know, for instance, I think that Vice News produces a lot of like high quality content. But you know, they're basically a lot of their content is stuff that used to be our bread and butter. And I say our, I mean like the greater like independent media hour, things that nobody else used to cover, like protests, like anything had to do with like anti-racist or anti-colonial work. Vice seems to have like their fingers in all of this, obviously with shitty politics. But I think that if we're able to deliver something at that level of production quality, which I do think it's possible, I just think we require a little more resources than we have right now, then we can do something on par with Vice that people are going to want to watch, even if you're not like an anarchist, even if you're not like, you know, a radical, right? And in terms of being like locked out of a social media, what I mean by that is that we've seen a really sharp drop of the things that we produced being circulated through social media. And, you know, the only thing that we can attribute this to is the algorithms are not working for us anymore. And we're not producing anything so entirely different than we were doing before the election. And this is not just us. Like, I talk to other folks who use social media to promote their projects, and they're all experiencing the same thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just going to say real quick, for it's going down, I mean, there's no question that, you know, the Facebook changes in algorithms have definitely impacted our hits. But I mean, the same could be said at Breitbart, at Newsweek. I mean, every single news media site that used Facebook or like, you know, really, you know, depended on it to get its stuff out, I mean, it all took a hit, you know, across the board. So it's not, I mean, I'm sure that some stuff is being targeted. I mean, actually, you know, there are some socialist websites that have written about this, about how the change has really dramatically, you know, gone after quote unquote fake news, which, you know, some of that has been conspiracy stuff on the right, but some of it's been, you know, anti-war, anti-capitalist, anarchist stuff. I mean, you know, IGD, you know, went from seeing hundreds of thousands of shares on some articles to like 12, you know, so it's very clear that, you know, especially pages and stuff like that, people have to literally go to the page to see the content. You know, it's not just popping up in their feed.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. So I don't really have an answer for how we're going to recapture the audiences that we used to have because of social media. I mean, people still actively use Facebook. That hasn't changed, and I don't foresee it entirely changing in the foreseeable future. We're spending a little more time on building our email list platform, which is still a fairly decent way of getting the word out. But as it turns out now too, if most people are using Gmail, Gmail is now placing things that they deem promotional in a different inbox. So it's a different way of throttling content, and so people have to know to. It's like going to a page. You have to know where to go to the submedia page to see the new content on Gmail. You have to know to go to your promotions, which is almost like a spam box. And so we're trying to figure out ways around that. But I think, like, you know, kind of harking back to the J20, I think one of the main things that we can do, especially all of us who produce media, is to pump each other's stuff, you know.
Right.
I know we have a lot of crossover, but we also reach different people in different places, right? Like, and so I think that you know, there's a message to all media people out there that we all also have to stick together and show solidarity, because it's really the only, well, it's one of the only effective ways that we can reach more people.
We hope that you are enjoying this episode of This is America, or the latest episode of the It's Going Down podcast. We know that a growing number of the proletarian community tune in every week to hear both resistance news and the latest headlines on everything from climate change to Trump.
Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell!
But before you fast forward that dial...
Hell no, it can't wait! Your lives will be affected!
We bring you a special announcement.
We need your help this winter in meeting our fundraising goal of $10,000. So if you don't want to see IGD slowing down anytime soon,
say hell no, motherfuckers!
Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop. Give us a one-time donation, buy some awesome swag, or sign up to become a monthly supporter.
Now, I want you to go in that bag and find my wallet.
Which one is it?
It's the one that says bad mother.
And now, back to the show.
Well, I wanted to bring up, you know, you brought this up a little bit, but, you know, recently you all, there was this year, you had a campaign to bring back STEM, and there was a short time where there was the fucking news, TFN, and there was a slew of short episodes that came out. I'm just curious, you know, looking back on that, you said that basically it was unsustainable to do both, but is this the last that we're going to see of STEM, or is he going to come back in some other capacity?
I think STEM's on vacation until further notice. I mean, I think that I really love that character, and I think that it will be, it's still incredibly useful on a time like this. But it's almost like we need a different team of people just doing that thing for it to be done properly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we found is that, you know, in years past, we just used to do two stimulator shows a month. And granted, these shows were kind of epic. They were like from 20 to 25 minutes long. But a lot of the episode was like mostly taken up from by interview. But writing stuff that's funny on a weekly basis is not easy. And that was one of the hurdles that we were finding, right? That, you know, every so often we will knock it out of the park, but most of the time it was pretty mediocre, and we felt we were not doing the audience justice, right? And so we decided that instead of like, you know, hitting people with like a lot of fart jokes, let's just take a break and figure out how to do this in a way that, you know, that's hard, like Stimulator used to be, but also that, you know, it's smarter than just, you know, poop and pee-pee jokes.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are really sad to see STEM go, just because that format is just so, I think, so likable. And I mean, you know, so many of us, if we've grown up watching TV or now, like if you look at late night, where a lot of people are going to get their news and to get like a critical look, you know, even more so than somewhere like CNN. I mean, if you're going to see somebody like break down kind of just the bullshit that's coming out of Trump's mouth or the administration, I mean, you're going to go to all of the late night shows, which, you know, are, at this point, are doing like better investigative journalism, in my opinion, than somewhere like CNN, which is just like going to have some pundits on. Two of them are going to be, you know, centrist douchebags, and one of them is going to be a Trump supporter, and you're not really going to get anything other than people screaming at each other. So I think that, you know, an anarchist version of that, you know, that's the news, interviews, and also funny, is something that, you know, still would be great to see.
I absolutely agree. But you know what I will also say is that I know there's a bunch of funny motherfucking anarchists out there, because I've met y'all, you know, I know you're out there, and, you know, and I really invite folks to come back in and bring the comedy, back into politics. I know there's crews out there who make memes, which I think are hugely helpful, and we need more of that. But I mean, like, for instance, like there's this, the Guillotine podcast.
Right.
I mean, Bones is a one funny son of a bitch, and I think that we could benefit from people who are doing more of that, you know. And I said this, like, I think last time that I was on the show, is that I think a lot of anarchists feel like they're stepping on people's toes, and it's like, you know, there's millions and millions of people out there, you know. If you create some sort of new anarchist media, whatever, we need you. We absolutely need you. We're only, I mean, these days, there's more anarchist media. And by that, I mean, like, you know, we've always been good at producing books and whatnot, but in terms of media, I'm talking about video and audio.
Well, yeah, I mean,
ever.
Like, if you look at, like, not only just the slew of pod. I mean, like every week there's a new podcast that comes out. But if you look beyond that, I mean, if you look at, I mean, now there's Commune Magazine that's going to be producing a, you know, a slick magazine. There's the Earthverse Journal that's been going around for decades. Crime Think is producing regular, you know, journalistic, reflective analysis pieces. They have a weekly podcast. You know, there's obviously everything we're doing, it's going down. I mean, every couple days, Unicorn Ride is dropping an investigative or journalistic piece on something. I mean, it's a big fucked up world, and there's a lot to talk about. So, I mean, there's no lack of anything. You know, it's, you're, like you said, you're not going to step on anybody's toes by starting another media project. You know, I do think that we can, and we're going to talk about this later. I do think that we should think about collaboration and, like, instead of necessarily replicating the same thing each time, you know, because, you know, eventually we're going to have to grow beyond where we're at right now. And I think it's great when people share skills and teach each other how to do things. But like you said, I mean, if people have an idea and they can dream it, they can do it, you know, and people should just get out there and really make stuff, because now's the time. And especially as we grow these networks, you know, we're able to pump each other up too. You know, we're able to spread different projects around.
Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, if you have the impetus to make some media, just start doing it, and start doing it now. Well, I think I'll say one last thing to it is that local media projects are hugely important too.
Yeah,
I think those are probably some of the most important ones actually.
Yeah, and I think like over the past year, you know, like Anarchist News last year on their roundup, they made some joke. They're like, you know, ins and outs, and it was like out is it's going down, and in is local, you know, counter info platforms, which in some ways is like, you know, is true in the sense that like those platforms really grew over the last couple of years, which is great. I mean, that's one of the reasons that we wanted to start doing stuff at IGD, is to really help all those sites grow and give them a spotlight. But that's been awesome to see. I mean, if you look at like North Shore Counter Info, Montreal Counter Info, Conflict MN, you look at, you know, something like, you know, a blog like, well, it's not even a news website like Philly Anti-Capitalist. I mean, there's stuff every day that's coming on to that. So, I mean, it's really great to see all these different counter-information websites grow, you know, in hubs in their own right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, Montreal Counter-Info has been like a very, very awesome resource for us up here in Montreal.
Yeah. Well, just moving forward, where do you see Submedia growing? I mean, we're talking about just kind of growing capacity, growing the ability to do certain things. But I mean, you know, as you continue forward and reach for the stars, what are some of the goals that Submedia has, and where do you see it growing over the next year?
I think one of the main things that we would like to see is that our platform is resilient, that we are able to, that our infrastructure is become so solidified that it's going to be harder to like knock out. A couple of years ago, both y'all and us went through the same thing, you know, attacks on our infrastructure by the alt-right. And I think that this is one of the things that we have to get ready for ourselves, because while it's cool to see, you know, places like Gab being kicked out of platforms, we also have to remember that we're also on the same boat. Like it can be like, you know, from one day, like we become the new boogeyman, right? And we could be kicked off of the platforms that process our payments, the domain registrars that hold our domains. Like all of these things are entirely possible. And so we like to think about five steps ahead and put on plans that will make it so that when these things arise, we're like totally ready for them. But also create, you know, revenue streams that are more continuous, so that we're not always operating on a panic mode. You know, how are we going to pay the bills this month? Which really hasn't been the case. We've actually been okay for the past couple of years. But you know, we just added another person to the collective, and so it makes the workload a lot more manageable. But it also you know, there's more bills associated with that as well. And so you know, that is the thing that more than anything I personally would like to see done. And you know, it's actually been really cool to see that that you know, people are supporting us through crowdfunding. But it's also been cool to see that people support other platforms like y'all through crowdfunding. And you know, I recently saw that CrimeThink also started crowdfunding, and that was something that in the past that they're sort of shunning that. But I do think that you know, in the end, all of us need to live in this world, and I know we all hate money, but it's the name of the game at this particular moment. And until you know we overthrow this system, this is what we're going to have to deal with, and we still have to buy food and pay the internet bill and you know, buy some tacos from time to time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just you know, kind of creating that ethos within our movement of supporting our own media is really important. Well, you know, on that note, what opportunities for collaboration do you see, or is that something that you're interested in? You know, I think, you know, we personally have talked about, you know, at some point I feel like people need to start putting their eggs together in one basket and really creating something bigger than all of the platforms currently are. And maybe that'll be different crews of people, who knows. But I mean, I think that definitely if we're going to evolve into something bigger that could rival something like the Young Turks or InfoWars, then we're going to have to pool our skills.
Yeah, I mean, I think that collaborations are some of our most favorite projects that we've done. And I think after leading up to J20 and after J20, I mean, there was a brief period there where IGD, Submedia, and CrimeThink were doing more things together. And you know, it happened organically. I don't know. I think that you're absolutely right. I think that we might need to, like, you know, build something a little bit bigger if we want to rival some of these liberal and right wing media outlets. I think it's gonna take, you know, people meeting in person, I think.
Right. Yeah.
and how we do that and when we do that is really up to us. But I do think that. One of the things that we've been talking about in some media is talking to people who are covering things sort of more locally. For instance, we have a friend who has been doing a lot of coverage of what's happening in Nicaragua, and he's down there, and thinking about how we can, instead of just making a trouble documentary, how can we empower somebody in a different location and have them sort of create the bulk of the trouble documentary. You know, while we can provide support and maybe like post-production help and sort of publish it as a media project, but something that is sort of really bottom line by somebody else. And these are the things that we're hoping to talk about once we wrap up this year.
Oh, when can I get some rest? Oh, when can I get some sleep? Find out what the truth is. I got so many questions I would like to know. Who is gonna stop the war? When the same ones who start the war are the ones who profiteer when they shoot a rocket there.
place pockets here. Who is gonna try and stop the deceases when the stock market value increases on their patented medication? The Vatican's miseducation turned this planet into patience. Who is gonna lead us the right way when all our leaders gonna stray? How long we gonna wait for our bright days when it already feels too late? Who's gonna put me to sleep at night when all these thoughts force me to write? In a world where we don't have no one else, I'm singing lullabies to myself. Cover me with blankets of music. This world's so hard and cold. Wrap me tight, the world is about to lose its collective mind, heart and soul. Tuck me in and rest me in your soft acoustics. Rock me and tell me it's possible to find out what the truth is. I got so many questions I would like to know. What kind of evil possesses some kind of evil to kill off all kind of people? Like we're not created equal with so many classes and divisions. But can you tell me what's the difference? Cause I think it's strictly business. Behind the statistics, the illogic and the logistics. Hide the sadistic and demonic sons of bitches called politicians. Part of my language, but behind the numbers and the percentage and all the excuses I think invented. Who are all these nameless people dying and all these faceless children starving with nowhere to rest their heads? If you listen close, you can hear them calling. Who is gonna put us to sleep at night? All these wrongs force me to write. In a world where we don't have no one else, I'm singing lullabies to myself. Cover me with blankets of music. This world's so hard. Like the world is about to lose its collective mind, heart and soul. Tuck me in and rest me in your soft acoustics. Rock me and tell me it's possible to find out what the truth is. I got so many questions I would like to know. I would like to know.
Well, turning now, what is going on in so-called Canada? What are you excited about? I think the last time we talked, there had been this doxing wave against people involved in the Daily Stormer circles. There's a lot going on in Canada. There always is. But I'm just curious, what are you seeing either in your neck of the woods or nationally happening that's exciting? What's going on?
Yeah, so in so-called Quebec, we had a right-wing party win the election, the provincial election, and that sort of had some people freaked out. I was certainly not happy about it. This particular party is a new party. The guy who became the premier of the province is a very rich person who owns an airline. They got the majority of their votes from outside Montreal. And immediately upon being elected, they said they were going to push for legislation that will make it so that public employees can't wear religious symbols, in their public jobs. What this really means and what this really is really targeting, women who wear hijabs, right? Because, you know, most Christians can just, you know, put their crucifix under their shirt. Whereas, you know, a lot of Muslim women, you know, because of their beliefs, don't really have a choice. And so this is stirring up a lot of bad memories from a couple of years ago when the separatist party, Parti Québécois, tried to do a similar thing. Essentially got voted out of power by migrants. But now this party, the CAC, it's a funny name for us, has done this. And what ended up happening, and this is really what gives me a huge amount of hope, is that there was already an anti-racist march planned for the week after the election. And as soon as these folks got elected and they made that statement about banning religious symbols in public jobs, the buzz around the march became huge. It became basically like a media thing for that whole week. And this is a march that was organized by anti-fascists and anti-racists and anarchists from Montreal, by a very radical group of people. And it was massive. It was like, it just really rocked the streets for everybody who was there. Everybody just reports, you know, not having this feeling of really owning the street since the 2012 strike. And so, that gives us like a great feeling here, because for the past couple of years, have we seen the sort of right wing, the far right sort of start taking a little more space in a place that's very left wing. It's been not the easiest time getting people mobilized to go to these sort of confrontational counter protests. And I think like there's been a bit of a turning point now that the CAC's in power. People are really taking this a little more serious. So we'll see how this plays out. We'll see, especially in the spring, like once the snow melts, we'll see how things are looking like for the street. But that's a really exciting development.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That sounds great. I just wanted to also ask, you've come on the show before talking about Puerto Rico, obviously hurricanes, in North America, continue. We've been talking, with people involved in mutual aid disaster relief here on our podcast and on This Is America continuously. You know, there still remains some amazing work that's being done in the Centers for Mutual Aid in Puerto Rico. Also, it was interesting over the past couple months. Well, interesting is one word for it, very sad, of course. But, finally it kind of came through, punched into the mainstream that, thousands of people had tragically died, in the wake of the hurricane and, continue to suffer. And there's still massive outages of power and water. I'm just curious, if you have any updates on Puerto Rico or anything as far as organizing that you could tell people about?
No, and I don't have that much to report aside from what I talked with my parents. The situation doesn't seem as hopeless as it seemed around this time last year, but it's definitely sad. I mean, in terms of what's happening there on a day-to-day, people are still living in droves. Like the island is basically emptying out. But as you said, there's still projects of mutual aid centers, and about once a month or maybe a couple times a month, I read a story about a new independent power project that is people powered, that is not owned by the local electric authority. But I do think that people, when they read things like these, I think that gives them a bit of comfort. But sort of people need to understand that these projects are probably the ones that stand out. Puerto Rico's power grid is in total shambles, and if out of one of those stories that you see of somebody figuring out some solar panels for the community, there's another like 1.5 million people who don't really have that. And so as I talk to people in different projects down there, it's like there's always a need for people who want to help out. I think that plugging in with mutual aid disaster relief is probably the best way to connect with people on the island. If people want to go there physically or funnel funds to decentralized projects down there, that's the way I would recommend. I mean, definitely do not give your money to large NGOs like the Red Cross. Do not give money to Amnesty International, who has been doing a campaign around Puerto Rico. Try to connect with local grassroots groups, because then you know that money is actually going to the people who need it the most, and not to some bureaucrats who live in faraway lands.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's just been really inspiring to see Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. I mean, they're just hitting it so hard. You know, they went on a huge tour. You know, they're doing such amazing work. You know, any way we can support them. I'm really glad that, again, Submedia made the Autonomous Disaster Relief documentary, and we have that also too to look back on and use as an organizing tool. But we've been talking now for a while. Frank, is there anything else that we can touch on, or any other thoughts you have in terms of media or what's happening in so-called Canada or tacos, anything else?
Yeah, no, I just want to let people know that even though the J20 story has like this awesome, happy ending, that there's people still need to raise a bunch of money to cover legal fees. And we're really encouraging folks to do fundraisers in their community for these folks who still have these legal bills to pay. And the film that we made, it's a really easy sort of event to set up, you know, to do a fundraiser. So, but even if you don't use the film, you know, organize a hip hop event or a music show, a bake sale, whatever, because these folks, they need hundreds of thousands of dollars still, collectively to pay for the legal bill. So I just want to, remind people of that. And of course, visit our website, sub.media, sign up to our email list if you want to really find out what we're doing and not be censored by the algorithms.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us. It's always inspiring to talk to you and to learn and just continue forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And a big shout out goes out to y'all. Like, I want to also encourage your listeners to give money to It's Going Down. That's doing their fundraiser right now. It's going down for people who might not know was hugely instrumental in informing people in the United States and around the world during a very crucial time, which was the beginning of the Trump era. So I tip my hat to you and your team, and I hope you guys go on for like another 100 years.
Me too. Hey, thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Sure. Bye bye.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us. And follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.